The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, Halloweenies! It's that time of year again, my most favoritest time of year! It's the time for the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror! Horror Story Anthology. Oh yes, right in time for Halloween. This year, we dug up a new approach to the story. We had listeners submit titles, and then we picked our favorite, and all of us wrote the same story. Well, the story with the same title anyway. The story title was submitted by Little Dr. Billy Robinson. Yes, I know he's a Demanza Corp employee, so he shouldn't be allowed, but his title idea was just perfect, and we all agreed on it. And, well, instead of telling you what it is, I will just let the stories talk for themselves. First up is Little Luke Giaconetti's story. Here it comes. It's a bit of a trick or feat.
Pump Me Up. Alexander lay on his bed, staring up at the spinning ceiling fan, which did little to alleviate the claustrophobic heat of the small apartment. Around and around it span, trying to lull him into a stupor which would bring sleep, but the combination of the swelter and the nagging urge in the back of his brain conspired to keep him awake. He laid there for a long while. The alarm clock and work would be beckoning soon enough. When the urge started to build, his efforts to drive it back down were never successful. Truth be told, Alexander didn't really want the urge to go away, but he felt he should at least make some sort of effort to keep it tamped down to reasonable levels, or else he'd be giving in to it every other night and never get enough sleep. Alexander swung his legs over the side of his small bed and sat up, the sheets clinging to his sweaty back for a moment as he did so. He leaned forward with his elbows on his knees and his thumbs resting on his brow, staring down towards his feet in the darkness. "Nothing's to do but to do it," he said to no one in particular, and after a moment he stood up and slowly made his way to the closet. He flipped the light switch, bringing 60 watts of soft, white light, filtering through the slats on the sliding closet door, throwing stripes across his face and chest. Alexander blinked as his eyes adjusted, then opened the door and promptly folded himself down Indian style. Carefully, he moved his organized shoes and sneakers to the right and reached underneath his slacks to pull out a large shoebox. A boot box, to be accurate, one which would be awkward to carry around a shoe store under your arm without it jutting out at odd angles. He pulled the box close to his knees, then gingerly lifted the lid, letting it flip softly to the carpet. He then slowly moved aside the tissue paper which hid the box's contents and stared intently at them. Three pairs of ladies' heels. Pumps, specifically. His eyes darted from one pair to the next, each one neatly standing up next to its mirrored twin. Involuntarily, a smile spread across his face as he peered at his private treasures, hidden from all. One pair was a navy blue, almost black in the dim light. The other two were both red, though while the shorter set was a deep red, almost a maroon, the taller pair were as red as a cherry, and seemed to gleam brilliantly amidst the semi-darkness. He selected the blue pair and picked up the right half, holding it delicately in his fingertips. Bringing the shoe up to eye level, Alexander turned it over and over, ogling every fold and line, as he had hundreds of times before. And as those hundreds of times before, he became excited, his brain twitching at the memories. The clack, clack, clack as she walked, her slim ankles and taut calves calling to him from across the street. It seemed like all of the noise of the city vanished in that instant, except for the clack, clack, clack. Her legs disappeared into a black skirt, but her calves and ankles and the shoes, my God, the shoes, were mesmerizing. The wave of nostalgia swept over him like a warm breeze, darting across traffic to get behind her, slowly closing the gap between them, his heart pounding in his ears but being drowned out completely by the clack, 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 the cold steel of his knife in his sweating palm. The smile became a dumb grin as he played out the scene in his mind, shoving her into the alleyway, her startled yelp followed by pleading to take her purse, her phone, whatever. Her breath became ragged as she panicked, his own breath even more so as he closed the distance, his eyes locked in on her heels. The soft, pointed toe, the rounding of the sole as it stretched down into the heel, and even in the alley the staccato clack, clack, clack as she backpedaled. Her pleadings were lost to the clack, clack, clack. The memories came quicker now, soon became a blur, closing the gap to her, his hand over her mouth, the flash of the blade. Her on her back, the clack, 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 silented. The details started to filter in again, cradling her leg in his hands as he nuzzled his cheek against her smooth calf, sliding down to her ankle, then to the pump itself. Back and forth, he had rubbed the leather against his cheek for what seemed like hours. Sitting on the floor of his apartment, Alexander subconsciously began to do it again, the excitement growing and growing as he did. There was no doubt now. The urge had to be, must be, indulged. Carefully, he replaced the heel next to its partner in the box, then recovered them all with the tissue paper and closed the lid. Back the treasure chest went to its hiding spot. Back went his shoes and sneakers, save for one ratty pair which he put aside. Standing quickly, he selected a pair of dark indigo jeans, a navy blue Henley, and a black jacket. He dressed quickly and neatly, then grabbed and pocketed his apartment keys and knife, then exited the apartment and half ran down the stairs to the street. The initial jolt of energy and excitement was his prime mover as he pounded the pavement. The simple decision to indulge himself liberated his mind and body for what he had to do, but it did not mean that a suitable object of affection would simply show up in front of him. He headed east from his apartment building towards downtown, the vague, hazy lights of which were still visible even as midnight crept closer. He fingered the knife in his pocket for a moment, then left it alone and focused on his surroundings. Downtown might have been a bit of a misnomer, but it was not exactly a metropolis. But it still had the necessary clusters of shops and boutiques and restaurants and bars. Even though it was Wednesday, there seemed to be brisk business at most of the establishments. His eyes darted from one to the next, catching glimpses of seemingly happy people eating, drinking, and making merriment through the dim lighting which lazily drifted from the windows. Patience was key. You cannot rush inspiration. Alexander took a seat on a bench, thanks Urban Renewal Bill, and people-watched, a term he found insipid but ultimately useful. The waiting, as the song said, was the hardest part. But Alexander knew the payoff was well worth it, and so he sat nearly motionless, turning this way and that from time to time. Having never worn a watch, he didn't know how long he had been sitting there when he saw her, or, more accurately, heard her. The clack, clack, clack aroused him from his semi-stupor like a screwdriver into his brain. Alexander had to resist his initial reaction of whirling around to face the sound, forcing himself to turn in a slow, modulated way. When his eyes came upon her, the combination of the audio and the visual were like the first drink of the evening, warming in his guts and cheek in anticipation. She wore a snug black dress. Alexander guessed it was at least part lycra or spandex or something else clingy, and it stretched itself in all sorts of provocative ways as her legs scissored forward. She was crossing his field of vision, allowing Alexander to study the hemline of the dress, her seemingly locked knees, the slim, pear-shaped profile of her calves, and the slender, porcelain-like ankles. The clack, clack, clack was louder and louder as he examined her, almost echoing through the streets as her black-and-white pumps did their heel-toe, heel-toe routine. The sheen off her right heel from the stray light of a street lamp set his mind ablaze. Patent leather, for sure. His mouth was dry, and Alexander forced himself to swallow hard as he stood up and began to move back west, keeping pace with her. He was behind her now, his eyes glued to the shapely legs which stood tall on those delicious heels. He'd catch a repeated glimpse of the back of her thighs through a 2-inch slit in the bottom of the Drem's dress's hem, the flesh pressing back and spreading the slit into a small upside-down V for half a second, then repeating with the other leg. Alexander began to gradually increase his pace, the gap closing foot by arduous foot. His eyes widened, not wanting to miss a second, as his lungs and heart raced to keep pace with his intentions. And all the while, the clack, clack, clack roared in his head, drowning out all other sounds as he gained ground on her. Suddenly, she turned on a dime to her left and continued a pace into an alleyway between a restaurant and another shop, disappearing around the bricked corner. Alexander blinked for a moment in surprise, but then followed right behind. He had to stop himself from running after her, but walked as fast as he could and close to about 5 feet when she surprised him a second time, whirling round to face him. Alexander had not looked at her face, but the move had taken him aback and jolted him back to reality enough that his gaze left her legs and instead focused on her properly. Platinum blonde hair hung pin straight past her shoulders, and her bangs looked like they were cut with a laser, clearly a wig. Her eyes were an icy shade of blue and stared without blinking right back at him. Her voice was something between a purr and a growl.
"Do you like what you see? Have I got you all excited with this dress, this body?"
Neither her eyes nor her voice wavered as she spoke, and as Alexander once again handled the knife in his pocket, she began to slink towards him, the slow click-clack of her heel toe driving a shiver up his spine. Her eyes darted to his crotch as she spoke again.
"Looks like you have something there for me. What do you like? What's got you all hot and bothered?"
Alexander had not counted on this, but his mind began to speed off in new directions, the possibilities stretching before him like an endless highway winding off to the horizon. The dumb grin started to spread across his face once again as he pulled the knife from his pocket, deftly unfolded it with his thumb. He wanted to answer, but found his throat constricted. With a second effort, he was able to speak. "Shoes," he said quietly, licking his lips to try to return some moisture. "Those shoes," he managed between heaving breaths. Another purr.
"The shoes? That's a new one. And that's what you have for me. You lucky boy, I have something for you, too."
As Alexander took another step forward, the glint off the barrel of the snub-nosed .38 flashed in his eye for a second. He hadn't seen her draw the pistol. He guessed it from her tiny purse, which he had not even noticed until now. But she leveled it at his chest with practiced ease, and a small smile creased her lips. Her voice did not reflect the smiling visage, and was hard as the bricks which surrounded them.
"You'll never forget me, baby."
The shot rang out like an explosion in the small alley, knocking Alexander down from the force in extremely short range. As he desperately gasped, trying to breathe through a punctured and blood-filled lung, she click-clacked over to him and looked down on him. His vision was starting to go dim as he watched her inhale the wafting gun smoke up her nostril and shudder slightly, her eyes closed tight as she did. Losing strength, Alexander's head lolled to the side, and he found himself up close and personal with her pumps, two tiny droplets of red marring the otherwise perfect black and white. And then his eyes failed him, fading to black, and the only things left in the world was a strange cold sensation in his limbs and the clack, 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 getting quieter and quieter in the alley. The next morning, behind the yellow police tape and amidst a quiet bustle as the crime scene unit did their work, a young detective read over his notes to his partner. "Same as the other three. Looks like Guy follows a pretty girl. She leads him into an alley and ambushes him. CSU recovered the slug. Looks like a .38, but ballistics will tell for sure. Only difference is, this guy was armed. Pocket knife. From the wear on it, probably used to cut boxes in a warehouse. Doesn't look like it helped him any, though." His partner, an older man, furrowed his brow in response. "Guy follows her into the alley. She pulls the gun. He pulls his knife to defend himself. Not sure I buy that." Crouched down next to the victim's corpse, the eyes staring along the floor of the alley at nothing in particular. "Poor bastard," the old detective muttered. "He's probably out looking for a little excitement. Ended up with a lot more than he bargained for."
Thank you.
Oh, that one's a shoo-in for one of my favorite stories of all time. Next up, we get a good stiff dose of reality from Sean Engel, who reminds us, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Pump Me Up by Sean Engel. By all standards, Terry Campbell led a pretty good life. A nice home, a good paying job, a nice car, and an incredibly hot wife. Jennifer Witte, daughter of CEO Thomas Witte, the founder and CEO of Conhugo Pharmaceuticals, was a bit of a wild child when Terry first met her. Having been a daughter born into wealth, Jen led much of her life like a Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian analog, replete with all-night partying, a string of starlet boyfriends, and even an uncomfortably lit sex tape, which wasn't supposed to air on the internet. But ever since Terry met her in college, he had begun to calm down her wilder ways, eventually leading her to a trip down the altar and a wonderful marriage of almost 5 years. However, just because Jen isn't showing up every night on TMZ doesn't mean her wild side has toned down all that much. Especially as we see this night, as Jen approaches Terry on the couch as they're watching TV together. Tossing Terry a stack of papers, Jen gives her husband a wry little grin, insinuating something a bit more than just watching TV tonight. "What the heck is this?" Terry asks. Jen replies, "It's a submission for a new device my dad's starting to market. It's to help. Well, just read it." Taking a look at the title of the pamphlet, Pump Me Up, Terry realizes this isn't your typical device that Conhugo is known for. Jen, I know your father's been working on pharmaceuticals for the longest time and he's trying to break into the realm of medical assistance devices, but this is an ad for an erectile dysfunction device. What the heck would I need that for? Well, yes, it's primarily for erectile dysfunction, but read long into it. If you read a little further into the ad, you'll see not only does it help with erectile dysfunction, but, well, it can also increase the manhood. Hey, wait, what are you getting at? I've never had any problem with my manhood, nor have we had any problems with our sex life. Yes, Terry, I know, but you are the love of my life, and you are the person I want to be with, but it's just gotten boring, and I think maybe if we did this, we could spice things up a little bit in our life. And let's face it, it wouldn't be the first time one of us has undergone surgery to make the other person a little bit more happy, as she stares down at her amply augmented breasts. Okay, you've got me there, Terry says. But this all seems kind of experimental. I mean, what kind of risk are we talking about? Look, I've talked to my father, the risks are minimal, the rewards can be enormous, she said, giggling to herself. Okay, I get it, ha ha ha. You know, I really don't think I need this kind of thing. Look, Terry, if you want to keep me in your life, if you want to keep me interested, if you want to keep me satisfied, you will do this for me. My dad's been researching this for years. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. This is completely safe. Why won't you do this to make me happy? Frustrated, Terry relents. Okay, we can go see a doctor and see what they can do about this and see if we can get this thing done. Oh, Terry, you're so wonderful. Thank you for doing this. I've already called Dr. James and have set up an appointment for tomorrow. Wow, you really were pretty certain that I'd fall for this. Well, I knew you couldn't say no to a bit more time in the sack with me. You're right on that, Terry says. The next day, Terry and Jen are sitting in the office of Dr. Stephen James, the doctor who's proposed to do the surgery. After undergoing blood screening and physical tests to make sure that he's healthy to do this, Dr. James approaches the couple, telling them what the surgery entails and what will be happening afterwards. Essentially, the surgery is very simple. We make a laparoscopic incision below the base of the penis and insert two inflatable tubes next to the corpus cavernosum, which can be inflated by a simple pump that's somewhat like an insulin pump. The fluid is simple IV saline solution and will really cause no chance for infection. It's a completely safe design and really well thought out. I had no idea, sir, that you were in some way suffering from erectile dysfunction. Yeah, well, that's not really the case. It's more for cosmetic reasons. I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about. Well, in the literature for the product, it says that there's enhancements that happen with the use of this. Well, there is moderate growth. It's only when the device is in use. That's fine by me, Jen says, because it's going to be getting a lot of use. Ma'am, I'm afraid you don't understand. This is meant to be a replacement for people with sexual dysfunction, people who have had surgery and are no longer able to maintain an erection. This isn't meant to increase the manhood of your average citizen. And besides, insurance doesn't cover this unless the person is definitely suffering from that type of dysfunction. Look here, doctor. I don't care what it's supposed to do. I want to have this done. We're going to put this in my husband and we're going to make it happen because I said so. My father is the head of this company that manufactures this, and I want this to happen. You will put this in regardless of the insurance problems or not. I want this to happen. Taken aback, Dr. James turns to Terry to see what he thinks, and Terry gives just a mild shrug. All right then, we'll give it a go, but you will have to know that this won't be covered in any way by medical insurance. Like I need medical insurance. My dad is the CEO of the company. I can afford this regardless. Over the next week, the surgery is performed, and Terry goes through it without a hitch. Releasing it from the hospital, the doctor tells Terry to go easy on the sexual activity situation. Like I told you, the entire operation is safe and successful, but we don't want to overdo it at the beginning. You need to take at least another week off before engaging in any acts. Try telling that to my wife, Doc, Terry says, as he heads out to the car to head home. Arriving at his home, Terry is greeted at the front door by Jen, in perhaps the skimpiest Victoria's Secret negligee ever designed. Welcome home, honey. What do you think? It's amazing, but, the doctor said we should probably wait for a while. Dr. Schmachter, I've been waiting long enough. It's been a week since you had the surgery. You should be recovered enough. Let's get to the bedroom. Grabbing his hand and dragging him up to the bedroom, Jen throws her husband on the bed and quickly strips the pants off of him. Eyeing his naked body, Jen remarks, Wow, it's a lot less obtrusive than they showed in the ads. Yeah, Terry replies. Most of the stuff is done transdermal, so you really can't see it at all. In fact, the only thing external is this little pack that activates the pump. It's essentially the only thing that you'll see outside of my body. It's great. Let's try it. Touching a button on the side of the pump starts a small whirring noise, which in turn causes the stored fluid to flow into the corpus cavernosum, turning Terry's flaccid member into a rock-hard column of love. Oh my god, it works perfectly. Does it get bigger? Well, yeah, it does, but the doc said to sort of go easy on it, you know, right after the surgery. Fuck the doctor. I don't care. I'm having this right now. Stripping off her underwear, Jen straddles her husband's body and grinds her pelvis into his own. Oh my god, yes. I could tell. Oh, it's so much bigger. Oh, pump me up. Pump me up to it more. Complying because, hey, who wouldn't comply when this was happening? Terry hits the button again, sending more fluid into the sacks and increasing the size of his member. Oh god, it's so, oh! More, Terry, more. Pump me up. Pump me up! Feeling a little uncomfortable, Terry reaches for the button once again and gives it another couple of presses, releasing more fluid into his already distended member. Oh, that's it, Terry. But I want more. Give me more. Pump me up. Pump me up. Pump me up! Starting to feel the strain, Terry says, Jen, we need to slow down. We need to slow down. I don't care about your damn strain. I want more. Pump me up. Pump me up. Pump me up! Later that night, Detective Ray Boisbert walks in on his friend, Investigator John Williams, at the crime scene. Hey there, John. What do we got here tonight? Looks like a simple case of a lover's quarrel gone bad. From what I can tell, it looks like the two were engaging in some sort of weird sex act, and then something went wrong and, well, it looks like the guy popped his top. Literally. What the hell is that supposed to mean? I mean, the male perpetrator had some sort of implant in his junk, and somehow it got overinflated and, well, exploded. Oh, sweet Christmas, that hurts. Yeah, I don't even want to think about it. But the worst thing was what happened to his wife. I guess after the incident, he grabbed a kitchen knife out of the kitchen and stabbed her. It looks like over 30 times. The medical examiner's not certain. Yikes. Sounds like a pretty cut-and-dried case of a crime of passion. Do you think the guy will get off? Is that supposed to be a joke? No, I guess it's not. No, actually, I was wondering, do you think the guy's going to be convicted for this? I don't know. They brought him out and took him to the hospital after this, and he seemed kind of crazed. All he kept doing when he was in the ambulance was repeating this one phrase over and over. Pump me up. Pump me up. I don't understand.
Whoa! What a dick! And now, as usual, the hair metal hero will inject a little fun into the situation with a little trip to the gym.
Pump me up. Training sucks. The hours of work, the dieting, the strain on your relationships, it all sucks. I go from my day job as a personal trainer to hanging around the gym for hours afterwards to get shredded. I want to be, no, I need to be, the next Schwarzenegger. It's my mission. I look in the mirror and pretty much see a guy who is in shape but not beefcake. That's where I need to be. Chiseled out of granite. A god. A man who would put Atlas to shame. Maybe I spent too much time as a kid reading comics and wishing that George Perez designed me. Maybe it was all the action movies with Arnie and Stallone and reruns of The Incredible Hulk. Whatever it was, it hit me. So, life goes on. The days helping others with their exercise routines and rehabbing people's injuries is nice. Most people are grateful that I'm working with them. Honestly, though, if I'm not getting you to say, fuck you and fuck this shit, at least once during a session, I wouldn't be doing my job right. Problem is, I've started saying fuck this myself. There has to be more that I can do. Something that will make this all happen now. Then it happens. I'm closing up the gym after everyone is gone one night. Of course, I'm alone trying to get myself a good pump late one night. And that's when shit like this always happens. I hit the lights and lock the doors. As soon as I turn around, that's when I see him. A big bear of a man, 6'5" with a barrel chest, redwood legs, and howitzers for biceps. The sight of him scares the shit out of me. Holy shit, I say aloud. The mountain in front of me just chuckles and says, I didn't mean to scare you, friend, but I noticed you were getting after it pretty hard in there. How long have you been at it? Today or in total, I say. In total, the mountain responds. About 2 years, doing everything every bodybuilding website and magazine can recommend. It's just not coming together the way I want. I miss pizza and ice cream and dating, but I know it would be worth it if I can just get there. What's your secret? How would you pump me up? Are you sure you want to know? The mountain says. Of course, I reply. I need this. It's my only goal in life. Okay, then. The mountain says coldly as he reaches into his coat and removes 3 small syringes filled with a golden liquid. This is how. These little golden beauties here. Wait, steroids? I say with a mix of fear and disgust. I don't do that shit. I'm a clean builder. No need to make myself angry and shrink my nuts, I say right back to him. The mountain chuckles again and says, But you see, these aren't like any other steroids out there. They don't affect your mood or your balls, just your muscles and your energy level. Look at me. Do I seem angry or covered with acne? And I can assure you, my nuts are huge. I'll take your word on that one, I say with a smile. How much did you use and how often? That's the beauty, he says. I only took 2 doses a week apart, and the results were almost instantaneous. Why are you offering me 3 then?
Well, the 3rd is if you want to go above and beyond the normal bounds of human perfection.
So you skip the 3rd one then? The mountain nods his affirmation.
My mind whirls with the thought of being the biggest man there is, dwarfing the great icons of my youth and becoming the new icon of perfection. I sigh a little and tell the mountain, I'll take them. The mountain hands me the 3 golden vessels and tells me that after the 3rd dose, there's no coming back. But it doesn't matter. My mind is still swimming with the possibilities of looking like a Frazetta painting come to life, and I don't even thank the mountain or acknowledge him after I have the key to my goal in my hands. I get home with the gold and go into my bathroom. The light is bright, and I remove the safety cap from the 1st syringe. I squirt a little out to make sure there's no air in there, and I drop my drawers and find a nice meaty pad on my thigh to stick the syringe into. The needle pierces flesh and really doesn't hurt. I press down the plunger and whisper, well, that's a start. I grab some cold chicken from the fridge, eat a little, and pass out on the couch. The next day I wake up with a bolt. I feel great. I don't look any bigger, but there's energy coursing through my every fiber, like I drank the best coffee and energy drink combined. I get to work with a smile on my face and a skip in my step. The day wears on and everyone I work with tells me fuck you and fuck this, the way it should be. I grab another late gym session for myself, and it goes great. I added just a little more weight this time to see how I'd do. Turns out, I did far more than I thought. It seems like I could actually see and feel the muscle mass growing, but that would be nuts. I go through this same routine for a week, and just like the mountain said, I take the 2nd dose at the same time a week later. My gains during the 2nd week are astonishing. I'm ripped and chiseled and so vascular it's disgusting. Disgustingly awesome. No one can believe how fast I'm shaping up, and neither can I. The mountain, that son of a bitch, was right. I'm easily twice where I was in just under 2 weeks. It's everything I wanted. Problem is, I want more. Modesty is overrated. Less is less. More is more. I still have that last syringe. One more helping of golden greatness. I have to do it. I have to be everything. Forget what the mountain said about the 3rd dose, blah, 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 no coming back, blah, blah, blah. I'm doing this shit, week 3, at the same time as the 1st 2. I'm gonna pump me up. The end of the week passes and the time has come. Down goes the drawers, in goes the needle. What a rush! Something is definitely happening. I feel myself swell and distend from every part of me. Veins coursing and bulging, biceps screaming and popping. Quads, lats, delts, glutes, all throbbing and pulsating with pure awesome. That's when something snaps. Actually, a lot of things snap. Like someone twisting a roll of bubble wrap and squeezing it. Oh fuck, that's not muscle, that's my bones cracking. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? My arms and legs are so goddamn big I can't move them. The bones are broken from the weight. My bowel lets go with a shudder, and the cracking stops. I manage to sort of roll and hump myself in front of my full-length mirror, and what stares back at me isn't even a man. It's just one giant veiny muscle, perfectly formed, chiseled from granite, would put Atlas to shame. As I feel the air seeping out of what's left of my lungs, and my life draws to its close, all I can think to say as I look at myself is, God damn, that's awesome.
Well, it's good to have a happy ending every once in a while, even if it's not the Hair Metal Hero's preferred method of happy ending. Next, we're gonna wipe things up with the last story, which is my humble little story. A story that I'm hoping will motivate you to be better. Oh, fuck it. Trick or treat, smell my feet. Give me something good to eat.
Pump me up! Ma, I'm hungry. Hurry up. I'm gonna be late, said Richard Duncan as he folded a piece of white toast with an over-easy egg on it sloppily into his mouth.
Hold your horses, Dickie,
said Ma, sliding a plate with 6 more eggs on it next to the plate with half a loaf of toast and a pitcher of orange juice. That would about round out the morning dozen, Dickie's daily routine, a an entire package of bacon would go down, too. When he was a child, his grandparents nicknamed him Chowhound, and it only got worse as a teen. Instead of growing out of it, his appetite remained voracious at 36 years old. He was a big guy, but definitely not fat, although he did have a pretty good beer gut. You could chalk it up to a fast metabolism, but high energy was never how anyone who knew him would describe Dickie. Dickie did several things. He ate, he excreted, he slept, he spent 8 to 12 hours on the computer, he masturbated. There was occasional variations. Sometimes he would go to see a movie or go to the mall to buy a new video game. But otherwise, it was wash, rinse, repeat. Today, he was going to one of his favorite variations in this routine. There was a motivational speaker at the Glomtech Convention Center, and he saw every motivational speaker that came to town. Motivation, though, was not at all what Dickie was after. He had never had a job and never cared to. Ambition was for suckers. Those with ambition, motivation, and desire worked their asses off and were often very successful, but they were never satisfied. No one is ever satisfied. He decided this life course after high school and he just kept hanging around the house until Ma told him to get a job or leave, but she never did. She just kept feeding him, and it was great. He realized that what was important to him was just feeding. Hungry? Eat. Tired? Sleep. Bored? Well, God created this little thing called the internet. If you're never, ever going to really be satisfied, then shouldn't the act of feeding on whatever you need at the moment and the fleeting satiation that you experience be all that you could hope for? If Dickie did drugs, he would have chosen heroin. When Dickie needed a fill-up on self-esteem, he went to the motivational speakers. He didn't believe a goddamn word they said and had absolutely no plans to put any of their ideas into action. He just wanted some of that pure adrenaline that a good talker could inject into you. A good motivational speaker could squash the little internal voice that accurately called him a loser for a month or two until the next slick life coach pulled into town. Dickie got out of the station wagon at the convention center, slamming the door halfway through Ma's goodbye. He glared back into the window, made eye contact with her, pointed to his watch, and exaggeratedly mouthed the words, 7 o'clock, twice, and then strode away. He wrestled his backpack off his shoulders and pulled out a bag filled with Captain Crunch and started shoveling it in his mouth. He walked up the sidewalk to a giant poster of today's event. At the top was a stately picture of the man himself, Dr. Kenton Whiteface. Doctor of what? Dickie could really give a fuck. The guy looked like a newscaster in an expensive suit. If he had a good line of bullshit and a rowdy crowd, that would be perfect. Underneath was a series of pictures of C and D list celebrities who had been, quote unquote, treated by Dr. Whiteface. Dickie only recognized a few of them. There was a comedian who smashed watermelons, singer Rick Ross, that cheesy blonde heiress who had died a couple weeks back, the guy who used to sell lawnmowers, and that weightlifter guy who just got arrested for selling dangerous super steroids. Maybe not the best group you would want to stick out on your poster, but they're at least more famous than the slobs who were going to the show looking for success. Dickie paid the entrance fee and went into the auditorium, which looked like it was packed with a few thousand people. Good, thought Dickie. I hope this guy can really rile them up. He took an empty seat on the aisle, about 3/4 of the way up. It was the easiest seat to get to. He sat down and checked out the crowd. It was 90% male, half of them dressed in t-shirts and jeans like Dickie. The other half were in cheap business suits, looking like they were going to a job interview. Across the aisle from him was a blonde woman. She stood up to adjust her skirt and put down her bag. Dickie gave her the eyeball. Blonde hair, looked like a wig, decent tits, really nice legs that ended in a really nice pair of feet and an expensive pair of pumps. She caught him eyeing her and shot him a look of pure scorn that would have shriveled most men. But Dickie simply didn't give a shit what she thought. He winked as she sat back down, and then the lights went down and the stage lit up. Bad techno music farted through the sound system, moving the hair on Dickie's arms. Out galloped Dr. Kenton Whiteface, his image blown up on the jumbotron behind him. He waved and the crowd roared. Then he drew his finger across his throat. The music faded out and the crowd hushed. He didn't even say hello. No one can leave today's talk until it is finished, he said dramatically. With perfect timing, the audience heard the clunk of the auditorium doors being locked. When we are done today, I will have a new business partner. Taken from this audience right now, he said. There was a murmur through the crowd and a few nervous chuckles. Dickie shoved the last handful of Captain Crunch into his maw and felt a little bubble in his gut, which made him wonder if those locked doors might present a problem if nature decided to call up later on. He pushed it to the back of his mind. Why are you all locked up in this room today with me? The doctor asked. Because you are losers. That's why. To the last man or woman in this room. If you weren't, you would have had better things to do than to come here right now. Fair enough, thought Dickie. A bubble popped in his belly. The good news is, Dr. Kenton Whiteface said, pausing for effect, there are two kinds of losers. The losers on that side of the door, and the losers on this side. If you are here with me, then at least you have the opportunity not to be a loser. But you have to decide now. You can be a winner right now. Not right after the show, not tomorrow, not next week. Right now. The crowd applauded along with Dickie. They knew the drill. You have to want it. You have to want it right now. Are you hungry? Because I can give it to you right now. The crowd cheered semi-enthusiastically. Convincing was needed. Whiteface walked to the edge of the stage and pulled out a comical, old-time TNT plunger. Painted bright red, its handle fully extended. The words, "Pump me up," were painted in bright yellow balloon letters across the front of it. He set it down. I called old Red here the pump. When I push the plunger down, I will set into motion the events that will alter your life right now. This was more like it. The crowd roared. Well, what are you waiting for? You gotta ask me. What does old Red say? Pump me up, they yelled. That's good, but you don't mean it. Pump me up, they screamed, and Dickie farted. One more time. This time for real, the doctor shouted. Pump me up, they bellowed, and then started to applaud, leaping to their feet when he placed his hand on the plunger and pushed it down. A deep, almost sub-audible bass sound that Dickie felt in his bowels came out of the sound system. It made the contents of his stomach churn and roil. He felt an irreversible downward pressure begin, and he clenched his anus. He had to get out now. The crowd was still standing, but their cheers died down as the sound grew louder. Some people put their fingers in their ears. Some grabbed their stomachs. Dickie got as far as half standing up before his bowels exploded into his whitey-tighties and then down the legs of his jeans. The woman in the blonde wig stared at him in disgust, but seemed to be dealing with her own gastrointestinal distress. He smelled the thick smell of human waste, but realized it was not just him. It was coming from all around him. Dickie still heard the low hum, now with added moans and farting noises. But this was blotted out by a new feeling. He was hungry, hungrier than he'd ever been. He grabbed Wig Woman by the arm and yanked her towards him. Her wig flew off and he saw she was completely bald. He took her arm and bit down on her hand. He felt her arm being drawn down his throat as if it were being sucked in by a huge vacuum. He chewed as it went down. Somehow, impossibly, he had half of her body swallowed up, and then he just tipped his head back and the rest slid down. Surreally, he noticed that the last thing he saw were two brown spots on the otherwise perfect pumps. He then felt a bizarrely wonderful feeling of absorption as he instantly digested her. He felt muscles grow, bones stretch, and he felt full. He bellowed and felt his chest expand to meet the roar. Then he felt his anus explode again, the remains of a person-sized meal being expelled. Around him, similar scenarios were playing out. Everyone looked like unevenly formed bodybuilders and were either eating each other or shitting each other out. One man swung two severed arms as he squatted and blew out a liquidy brown shower. He had a second to take it all in when he was gripped again by that insane hunger, and he grabbed the man with the two extra arms and bit into his shoulder and managed to have him in his belly in about 5 seconds. Digestion. Expansion. Hunger. Feeding. Dickie repeated this so many times, it was just a blur of red, pink, and brown. When it was finished, he stood alone, swaying in the aisle. A 9-foot pink hulk streamed in shit and blood. He roared and looked toward the stage to see the only person left who hadn't taken a trip through his digestive tract. Dr. Kenton Whiteface. "You can't eat me," said Kenton, his voice still booming through the sound system. "You're my new business partner." Dickie decided he was so hungry that he was going to eat him anyway. He strode towards the stage, salivating. This time, a higher pitch came through the speakers, and Dickie felt searing pain from top to bottom. He backed away until he hit the sidewall of the auditorium. He smashed his fists against the concrete and felt it explode outward, sending sunlight streaming in. "It's a big world out there, partner," shouted Whiteface, laughing. "Are you hungry?" "Yes," Dickie thought as he stepped out into the daylight. "I'm starving."
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.